When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for Friday Morning GM. Our co-host, Vas Larikos, completing his restaurant right now. I'm sure it'll be open fairly soon, but he's in a lot of heavy works. So we have a guest host today, Matt Ross, joining us. You may know him as Kid Rock 20. Matt, how you doing?
Fun time of year, Ken. Looking to talk about it.
All right. We're going to take a run through a very long to-do list, kind of looking at a calendar of the Ravens offseason, try to break that down into three main primary groups and a lot of decisions that go in there. The things that have to be done by 3/12, the start of the league year, the things that need to be done before the draft that come after that, and then after that are things that have to be done before the regular season. And there are some of these could potentially stretch out into the regular season, but most of them are you'd want to get done before the regular season for reasons we're going to talk about. So, Matt, great to have you on. Really appreciate the recent discussion about your UFA guy. And I'm trying to forget who that I'm trying to.
Alaric Jackson.
Alaric Jackson, right, of course. So look forward to that coming up before the 12th, because Alaric Jackson is certainly one of the big name free agents out there. But let's go ahead and jump right in and talk about some of the things that Eric DaCosta has on his to-do list here. Not talking about the combine here, for starters.
Yeah, so for sure. Just a lot of work for DaCosta to do here before 3/12 and after. So if you're DaCosta, it's a full year-round job. So I'm looking forward to discussing everything he's got to do here.
He gave a few hints of this at his combine presser. But the very biggest thing that the Ravens need to do is determine what they're going to do about Ronnie Stanley, and determine if Ronnie Stanley can be re-signed. It sounds promising from what both he and John talked about in their press conferences, as opposed to Mark Andrews, where it sounds a little bit different. We'll get to that a little bit later. But what was your take on their comments about the Ronnie Stanley situation?
Surprisingly optimistic. A lot of times EDC doesn't give anything away. My read from him was that it seems like, you know, I don't think they have a full deal structured in place, but maybe they have some sort of understanding on where it needs to land. And so I read it as optimism. Did you read it as the same, Ken? Seems like there was good momentum, at least from both parties, and they weren't at an impasse.
Right. For sure. I read it as very positive. It's I think the Ravens have acknowledged they want to re-sign him as probably the most important thing. And that Stanley probably has told him he wants to finish in Baltimore if he possibly can. So they've at least probably at that. I don't know how they've exchanged figures, but I don't know how you could be on the same page without having at least preliminarily exchanged figures to start with. So hopefully they're just in the final dress up the contract phase at this point to get it done. Now, one other tidbit you may have heard is there's a question or two about Lamar Jackson's input into players that would be the Ravens may sign at other skill position parts or even on the offensive line to try and build the offense around him. And he mentioned he's going down to Florida to see Lamar, or he's planning to go down to Florida to see Lamar. I assume that's happening pretty clear. I wouldn't doubt for a second that they're going to talk about who is going to be playing around him, but I think there's another primary reason for that trip.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that getting Lamar extended or restructured is going to happen to free up some cap space. So I imagine EDC is going down to talk about an extension. I would assume that an extension is certainly going to be top paid quarterback in the league or top paid player in the league. So a lot of it to me just comes down to the structure. Do they try to do it like a deal that Patrick Mahomes has where it's a longer duration where it's getting restructured almost every year or every other year? Do they try to add on another 5-year chunk to the deal that they're already, I believe, 2 years into? So interesting that he mentioned openly that, he basically said that Lamar has earned the right to have input on decisions. And as he's been growing in stature and importance to the franchise and the team, that he's been running things by him. Now, I will say I do think he was involved in the I like DeAndre Hopkins and Odell Beckham chatter that happened a couple years ago. And we're still paying for Odell Beckham and the production that wasn't all that great. So I'm sure there were some good things that happened behind the scenes there. But, not every player makes the best GM. But happy to hear that they're working together closely. And I think that them having a good relationship is really important with where we are as a franchise.
So one of the things that we need to talk about this fairly soon, because by draft day, they're going to have to determine the status of Mark Andrews. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But I would think that Mark Andrews is one of the topics they'll have to discuss. The stance on that. Certainly Lamar has heard by now what DaCosta has said on the in his interview, what Harbaugh has said. But DaCosta's comments really almost talked about Andrews skating around or skirting around the notion that he's probably gone for this year. But it's possible that part of the discussion could be, hey, it would make Andrews affordable. We could at least keep him around for 25, maybe, if we could get you restructured, kind of thing. And, they can do a simple restructure anytime they want. They don't need a visit to Lamar for that. So this has got to be an extension that they're really talking about. I don't think they'd add 5 years. I think that's probably unrealistic, although I'd probably love to see it. I think it's more likely 2 or 3 years at the outside is what they would add. But that would do a tremendous amount of potential relief to the Ravens, and it would be a lot of obviously very good news for Ravens fans to have Lamar around for an additional amount of time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the play of Lamar as he's matured and grown as a player, you definitely see him growing from the player where that first year in 2018, you could tell he was really developing as a quarterback. He put a lot of hard work in over multiple years to improve his mechanics, his delivery, his just overall understanding of football. And, he's no longer, people, would always joke that he's a running back, who can also throw, but he's really grown as a quarterback. And it's made me, start to believe more in his ability to play into his 30s and deeper into his 30s and be effective. And I think for him, the biggest thing that I've seen his growth in is his pocket awareness and his ability to move and step appropriately to extend a play, which is just absolutely deadly. And as players like Zay Flowers, Isaiah Likely, Rashad Bateman are learning to move with him as he moves, man, that was, that's just a killer combination. So can he continue to get better there? Can he continue to get reading defenses? I think he can. And, the better he gets at some of those skills, the longer it's really going to extend our window.
Yeah, the thing that I see, I completely agree with you on what you said, by the way, but I think that the other characteristic, which I think Lamar showed probably the most 2025 growth in, is both pre and post-snap adjustments. The stalking around the line of scrimmage, resetting players, really taking stock of what the defense is doing, even if he's just going through it in his own mind, taking more time to do it, is very effective. I think he's made good post-snap adjustments as well. Always has had excellent pocket awareness, the ability to avoid pressure and move around and whatnot. But he's done more with it, I would agree, this last year, obviously, in what was his best year. So just outstanding in terms of his own improvements there. So anyway, Ronnie Stanley's the biggest decision probably in terms of new dollars spent. I think that the Jackson deal will be a lot of new dollars, but it's dollars where the Ravens are expecting to spend at some point. Mm-hmm. Probably in absolute cases, the Jackson money is certainly going to be bigger, but the Stanley decision might be bigger in terms of how it impacts the rest of the team and the expectations of a change in available cap in future years.
Yeah, for sure. Ken, how long, if I just off the cuff, how long do you think Lamar can play? How many more years do you think he can play at an elite level? How many years do you think he can play at an above average level? Now that you've seen the first 7 years, the body of work, what would you project? I know it's not easy, yeah. But
he had one of his really good running years this last year. So I think if seeing that, you know, seeing his the way he got back in shape, lost weight to drop down, I think, you know, we could be seeing a guy who can run for 600 plus yards for another 4 years, maybe. If after that, you know, his running will be reduced. It'll be reduced over this next 4 years for that matter. But as his running is reduced, other elements of his game will pick up. The special relationship he's got right now with Derrick Henry is a very good one for both players. I think Henry actually benefits more, but Lamar is benefiting also in terms of getting free of the pocket. So the Ravens will probably be very conscious about that in terms of keeping, you know, a high quality running back with him at all times. And then I think that whether that's Henry or not, and then I think they're, you know, they would like also to make sure that his own running decreases a little bit as he gets older. Oh, let's move on, because the next thing they have to figure out is about Tre'Davious White. He's a free agent. Beginning of the league year, there'll be competition for his services. We're getting close to a tampering period, a legal tampering period that's going to occur. Though I don't doubt that Tre'Davious White and his agent know what his value is. This is a good time to try and make a deal for White. And one of the interesting questions is whether that'd be a 1 year deal or a multi-year deal. White, an older player, didn't look like much with the Rams before he came to the Ravens. And we've heard this particular story before with Marcus Peters, of course, came to the Ravens and played quite well. Where would you be in terms of signing him for one or more years, Matt?
Yeah, I would be open to it. I like having him on the team. You know, that first game he played, you saw the ball skills where Brandon Stevens was traditionally having his hard time getting his head turned. You know, Tre'Davious White all of a sudden turns his head and makes a play on the ball once or twice. I will say I do get a little concerned about having too many players that you don't want to play on special teams. So if you have someone like Tre'Davious White, you don't, you know, you're probably not going to run them on special teams. I also have the opposite fear of too many players that you can only play on special teams. And so I think that it's a balance that EDC needs to have where, you know, if you sign a player like Odell, obviously not this year, right, but a couple of years ago, you're not running him out there on special teams, right? So you need to make sure you have the right blend. And I also want to make sure that they, you know, don't get to the point where we just have far too many special teams only players. I feel like that just limits the roster. I felt like the Kane and Braid combo limited the roster. So I would be open to it. I think for Tre'Davious White, it would have to be pretty cheap. And I would hope that with the 11 draft picks that they're looking at a corner or two. And, you know, I'm not all that wild about JAD. I'm just not sure if he's durable enough for me to want to commit a roster spot to. And so, I don't know, I think you might be looking, while not at the top end of the cornerback depth chart, but at the lower end of the depth chart, maybe doing some refurbishing this offseason and bringing in some new blood. But are you big on bringing back Tre'Davious White?
I think he's a reasonably priced 1 or 2 year option to patch what you've got there. But I want the Ravens to get younger at the position, which is part of what you're implicitly saying by saying you want guys who can play special teams and defense. JAD will give you one of those, but JAD is not secure on a roster spot this year, as far as I'm concerned. It's his fourth year. The sand is out of the hourglass in terms of future value beyond 25. So you're not playing for that. So JAD, it's what can you do for me this year is what's going to get him on the roster. He can play special teams for you. I don't like him as a cornerback still. I had to listen to so much praise be heaped on him last camp over what was going on. I'm like, this guy still can't find the football in the air. He still can't do it. And I part of it is there's some coach speak going on. They want to build up a guy, and then he gets into games, and you just see he's not finding the ball again. He did, by the way, I think it might have been in the Cleveland game, the first one that they lost. He came in late and he made a play on the football, and then he also gave up a touchdown. I think I may have the game wrong.
I think that was Cleveland.
All right. So that was nice at least, but I'd like to just get some decent, consistent play out of him. This is a year where, if I had to guess, their fourth cornerback might have to play 200 snaps, let's say. You never know exactly the amount because cornerbacks get hurt, but you got to figure a certain amount. Your third guy, is going to play a lot. Even if you go to big nickel and have a three-man rotation on the outside, or you have a third guy who's just waiting to play, or only plays in regular nickel situations instead of big nickel situations, whatever it might be, your third guy is going to play a lot. Your fourth guy might play a couple hundred snaps still.
Yeah, agreed. And I like that Tre'Davious White plays on the outside. I don't like having a glut of inside guys, especially with Marlin's good play on the inside, Hamilton's play on the good, on the inside. That makes me really wonder about Mollett. I mean, I think you can save a little over $2 million by cutting Mollett. He seems like he would be gone, right? Almost like instantly, right? Because we do need some cap relief. So I would assume he's gone pretty quickly. Do you think he has any trade value, a conditional seventh? No, not really. Okay.
No, I think everybody knows he's cut. It's too big a savings to say no to. He didn't play well last year when he did play, which was very little. So it's not like there's a lot of loss. He was a reasonably solid player. They went a little further than I would have on the 2024 contract. I was a little surprised by it, and they had a lot of guys who were ready to play slot corner between Ardarius and Hamilton and obviously Humphrey, that they didn't really need Mollett. And still they put him in there when he came back from his injury, and then he was fairly quickly gone again. He does meet the standard of what you were saying early, is a guy who can play defense and special teams, though.
True. Yeah, very true.
All right, let's keep moving here. They got two guys that they'd like to sign probably to qualified veteran contracts, and they're two free agents. Harrison had one this last year. Let's be clear about this. Qualified veteran contract, you can pay him $1 million extra that doesn't count against the cap. So effectively for $2.5 million, you can have this player. And Harrison got that contract last year, but they had two available and they only used one. This year, they have two new guys that are available for it because you have to have four consecutive years with the same team. And Tylan Wallace now is eligible for it. And I think he'd be an outstanding choice for one of two such contracts. And he could make $2.6 million roughly, and only about $1.6 million count against the cap. He may have a better offer. That's the problem with Wallace.
Yeah, my assumption with Wallace is if we could get him on that would be excellent. Save that million in cap. I would think that he could find 2 for $8 or 3 for $13 somewhere. I think sometimes teams like players who have played for the Ravens, just the coaching is good. You've been in important games, you've played against good teams. So I don't know, maybe he's gotten some exposure where someone wants to pick him up. I think there's several teams with a lot of money who need teams who have played with good players, good organizations, and need to really revamp their culture. And, bringing in Wallace on a 2 for $8 deal, honestly, isn't the worst way to spend money if you have a lot of extra cap, right? Obviously not for the Ravens, but if you're a team with a lot of cap, I could see Wallace being a guy that you would bring in for that. So, would love to get him on the qualified veteran contract, but not sure if he's had just too much exposure.
So the advantage is the Ravens are the only team that can offer him the qualified vet contract. So it creates a market friction that can keep him in Baltimore. So he really has to get another deal like what you're saying. And since there's that difference in there, you really have a chance to keep a player at a reasonably good value there. I'm not 100% sure there's a better deal out there for him. I know he's tremendously valuable to the Ravens, both for his special teams play. maybe not even using him as a punt returner anymore, because there he had some foibles, but having him cover kicks certainly in the way he has and be part of the return team as a blocker of the gunner or a guy who you're just trying to block punts, all of that he could do. But he just had a very productive year as a receiver as well. And also he's the Ravens' best run blocking wide receiver. So they really want him on the field, I think, for that with all the run blocking they do. Obviously a very willing player. Haven't heard one negative peep out of Wallace his entire time in Baltimore, as opposed to I'm unhappy with my role. And he was very productive this last year on a per target basis. So it wouldn't have been unreasonable, but he's been definitely a great soldier the whole time he's been here.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you also on the punt return. I'd like to see the Ravens really figure that out. I thought this year it was pretty weak part of the team. I remember being at the Eagles game. There was a punt that Wallace let go over his head, kind of rolled down to the two. And I remember looking at I was with my in-laws, they're from Philly, and I looked at him. I said, wow, that's not good. I worried that this flips the game. And would like to see them getting a little bit better, I think, just better decision-making, better returns. Sometimes they had guys who were good at returning, but they had a hard time hanging on to the football. So kind of an underrated need where you have 11 draft picks, right? You have a lot of picks at the bottom of the draft. Be scouting that punt returner. Let's get some action there going forward. But yeah, would be happy to see Wallace back. Worried that he's just a little bit too expensive once he gets out into the market.
Same thing applies to the punt returner as applies to other players. If they can only play defense or they can only play special teams, they're only so valuable. If you can only return kicks, if that's your only function on the team, that's not really what you want either. You want a guy who can play some wide receiver, be a jet motion guy and gadgetry and whatnot, or possibly pick cornerback for you even with a punt return background. So hopefully they'll have a guy like that they want to either develop as a corner and play special teams this year or whatever it might be. All right. The other guy who could get a qualified veteran contract is Patrick Ricard. And I think it's probably fairly reasonable in his case, although again, there may be another bidder and I worry about the specific bidder involved on both of these players being the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah, for sure. It seems like the Chargers love our former players, former coaches, former front office personnel. I don't want to break the bank on a fullback. And I think that Ricard's had, I think it's multiple hip surgeries. I think he's been an incredible player. So I want to, you know, get that caveat out there first. Really enjoyed watching him, what he's done for the team. But where the team is, we're spending a ton of money at quarterback. We're spending a ton of money at inside linebacker, among other positions. We've got a really expensive running back. I would just be very cautious, you know, to go, you know, even $3.5 million a year for Ricard. I think if you can do the qualified vet contract where he gets 2.6, but it's only 1.6 against the cap, that might be the best of both worlds. But someone out there may want to snag him. And if that's the case, I think the Ravens have to be okay with that. Again, you have 11 picks. Figure out who the next person is. Is it another defensive tackle convert? You know, what can you get to plug in that role? And, you know, maybe in the first year, maybe that's someone who does take a few snaps a game at D tackle and rotates in. But I'd like to see them either get Ricard very, very affordably or move forward to someone younger.
Okay. Very, very reasonable. By the way, I think it's a second friction besides the million of quote unquote non-cap dollars they can pay him is the fact that Ricard actually has a fairly significant endorsement presence here in Baltimore. And I think that could increase if Tucker is out of the picture. So I think he's one of the really easily marketable common man kind of figures on the team. Tyler Linderbaum could do it. You know, they've certainly got any number of players on the team who'd be good. Kyle Van Noy would be great in commercials. Marlon Humphrey would be great. You know, depending on what kind of product you're selling, he'd be terrific. So it's not like there aren't other players, but Ricard, I think it's actually a significant portion of his income that he might earn anywhere. And it'd be a good choice for him.
Yeah, let's move on here. Michael Pierce get a commercial. I mean, he's lovely. That, he'd be,
Golden Corral, I'm thinking, or right, you know, right. Sort of a home style family buffet or something. All right, let's move on. Ardarius Washington, I think, is another key guy to consider. Do they have to tender him on the 12th? So they have to decide what they want to do. They could use a second round tender, in which case they'll pay him about $5 million and change, or they could use a original round tender. Since he was a UDFA, they wouldn't get any compensation from him being signed by another team. Or I think it's called a low tender now. But they would get the ability to match any other team's offer. So another team could come and say, hey, we want you for three for $12 million. We don't want you for just 1 year. And the Ravens could say, oh, okay, we'll pay that. And so if he signs an offer sheet with the other team, then the Ravens get to match that. You do run the risk that anybody who would participate in that market of setting the contract level for the Ravens probably wants to stick a poison pill in it that the Ravens can't possibly accept, like front-ending the dollars or something that will make it unattractive for 2025 or that sort of thing. So Washington is a guy. I would love to get him on a multi-year deal. I think it's just my number is probably just a little bit less than that $5.2 million, like maybe 3 years for $12 million, something like that.
Yeah, completely agree. One year for $5.2 million for Ardarius seems a bit steep. I definitely have concerns about his injury history and overall durability. He is a smaller player. I love how he plays with tenacity. He comes up, makes hits. You know, he's not afraid. He doesn't shy away from the contact. But, you know, the league is wary of safeties of his size for good reason. You know, you think of someone like Bob Sanders comes to mind. Hell of a safety, but you know, that guy was always injured. And when he wasn't, the Colts defense was really good, right? It would kind of ebb and flow based on his injury history. Mm-hmm. Something like three for 12 for Ardarius, I'd be all for, but I am weary of giving out too many mid-level contracts. I feel like we have a lot of very big contracts, and you know, his specialty and area on the field, is that an area where we could get cheaper? I think it's really right price for Ardarius, and if the price is just too steep, those 11 draft picks have to come in here. We've brought in a lot of new secondary coaching, and if we have to bring in some young blood, they're going to have to get the young talent ready to go in the secondary, because we can't be running with the secondary that we saw in the first two-thirds of this past year. I mean, that was just absolutely insane.
I think the team, based on their on how they've allocated their coaching talent, very clearly needs to address specifically safety. Probably also corner, but specifically safety to get Hamilton freed up to move around and be the ace of Trump again. A couple other high dollar extensions that you're going to need to deal with. Andrews and Humphrey optimally will be decided before 312. Humphrey, it's not absolutely essential in either of these cases, because if you get Lamar done, you'll have the cap you need to work through and get through at least to the beginning of the season, and probably beyond that. But with Andrews, if they want to extend him, they're going to want to do it before the draft at the very latest. In Humphrey's case, also a case where you'd want to do it by 312 in case you had a free agency move you wanted to make that went along with it. I'm not really a big fan, obviously. You guys have heard the show before, the Ravens going all in and signing a bunch of outside free agents. But Andrews and Humphrey, if you extend those guys, you could create some cap room to spend on the free agency market.
Yeah, when it comes to Andrews, he's such a great player. I think it's either him or Likely. I think you need to speak with Isaiah Likely's camp and figure out what are you willing to extend for. If Likely is saying, you know, hey, I would be one of the top three tight ends in the league if I didn't have to split my target share. Right. I want a deal, like I am the number one tight end. Like I'm to get the next biggest tight end deal in the league, and the Ravens are a bit weary of it. Maybe you go to Mark and say, hey, can we do a 3-year deal? Maybe keep it at a similar AAV, but you know, push a little bit of it out. I would be okay with that. Ideally, you would keep Likely for the long term. I do think that, like you said, you could make it work for one more year, but I don't like pushing so much cap commitment into the future years. If you look at some of the deals like the Roquan deal, the Madubuike deal, there is a ton of money downstream that's going to hit. And you know, sometimes you have to make the tough conversations. You can only use the credit card for so long. So to me, you need Likely is a key player, because knowing what you can do with him will help you figure out what to do with Andrews. And you know, it's probably either Andrews or Humphrey. And based off, you know, where we saw this past year go, I guess, you know, it might make more sense for it to be Humphrey. Although I do think cornerbacks break down, and once they break down, they start to lose a lot of effectiveness. Can Humphrey move over to safety? Will some of his, you know, play on the ball this year would maybe help pretend that he could do that, which would be nice. So certainly an interesting discussion that they have to be having at the castle here between these two. And ultimately, I think some of the younger guys and how they pay them are gonna dictate what happens with some of the older guys on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about the conversation that DaCosta is going to have with Lamar in Florida, and really that's almost certainly discussion about an extension. It probably part of that could be, hey, if we got you extended, not only can we keep Andrews for this year, but we could keep Likely for long term. That might be another component that comes into this, because we got to figure out how to pay him for the next few years. I don't know if they can keep both of them. I think there probably is a slim chance with the right extension for Lamar, but I think they probably have got to be looking to get younger, and more importantly, they need to unravel these two contracts, these three contracts, actually all three at tight end, expire after the 2025 season. They can't wait for that time bomb to explode and have all three of them coming due. Now they'll find a way to sign one, I'm sure, but it's a really bad situation to be in, to be that unsettled at a position going into a draft. So I know there are a lot of teams that only have like one tight end that they trust with the football at all. But in today's NFL, I think more teams have two guys they like to throw to. They may even have two plus an inline blocker like the Ravens do. And it becomes much harder to fill out that checklist if you wait till the last second to do it.
Agreed.
All right, let's roll on. Other things that the Ravens have to accomplish by 4:24, that's the first day of the draft. Obviously, they have to build the best available board, and we could talk about what the priorities are, you know, offensive tackle, edge, free safety, interior offensive line, cornerback. What do you think first, by the way, when you see that they have like five needs that are pretty significant?
I'm glad they have 11 picks. I will say, although they have 11 picks, they don't actually have that much value of picks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is benefit in having a high number, and there's benefit in having high value. I just think that it's important to note that while we have high number, we don't have high value. Certainly have a lot of needs, certainly have a lot of spots where they need to be bringing in more talent. And, you know, I think they need to, and we'll probably get to this in a couple minutes, but they really need to be thinking about, in the future, am I going to be able to pay a Tyler Linderbaum big money? If not, do I have the right center prospect in the building to learn behind him for a year? You know, are we going to be able to re-sign a Travis Jones? If so, do we have the right person in the building behind him? And so when it comes to this draft, you know, maybe signing Ronnie Stanley makes the tackle need significantly less. Maybe you can kind of get by with another year of Van Noy and Owe on the outside. Maybe you could sign a Justin Blackmon at free safety, but you really need to be looking at this draft as over the next 4 years, which is how long you're going to have these guys for, maybe a fifth year option or a franchise tag. What do we really need over the long haul? And do we make some different decisions if we think we can get a player? You know, do we trade a guy earlier instead of letting him play it out and get a comp pick or something to that effect?
Right. Well, that's certainly an issue. There's several players that might apply to. You know, they have a couple of different ways to unwind the tight end contracts, but one of them is to trade Isaiah Likely. Am I in favor of it? No, but it Likely would produce quite a significant return for the Ravens. I might even give you a first round pick. I think it would likely be a mid to high second round pick is what you get in exchange for Likely, making, you know, not very much money in 2025. And then you'd have the potential to re-sign him after that. He's a potentially very attractive trade target. If you can only use one, you know, that might be a direction you'd have to look at to pick up trade capital. But you mentioned the value overall, but if the Ravens traded all 11 of their picks, it only adds up to a JJ value that's somewhere in the 10 to 11 overall pick range. So right there, you can see that, you know, a large number of teams have more draft capital than the Baltimore Ravens this year.
Yeah, for sure. I am all for trading Isaiah Likely if The team goes to him, tries to work out a deal, maybe pushes their comfort zone from a financial perspective, and realizes they're still not in the same ballpark as Isaiah. I am a big fan of turning value into value, right? And the way you have to kind of view football is in periods of, you know, 4 years for these young players, maybe five. But, you know, if I can turn Isaiah Likely into something where, if I had to guess, I would say maybe like a high round, second round pick, maybe like the 8th through 12th pick in the second round. Again, just guessing is what I think you probably get for him. Maybe you could get a team, like you said, to maybe to bite at the back end of the first. If you can't sign him long-term, I think you've got to find value there. And I'm all for playing a little bit of a dangerous game of, hey, if we're going into the last year and we can't sign you long-term, I'm more for them trying to get aggressive, bring in more talent that's younger, that's cheaper. And, you know, when you do that, now you have more money to spend elsewhere, right? So instead of paying Likely a couple million bucks this year, you know, you could bring in a rookie that's earning less and have more draft capital. So I would be curious to see what they do there, but I would be all for moving on from Likely if they had to. I would love to keep Likely here, young, dynamic player, obviously. I'd ask Ken, what do you think about Linderbaum? If someone said, hey, gun to your head, what's the trade value for Tyler? What do you think?
That's a really good question. I have thought of it in terms of it. It's not something I really want to contemplate given how dire the Ravens offensive line situation is, because they'd really be throwing a lot of they'd be pissing in the wind if they did it in terms of the potential risk involved of getting splashed. You know, they could do it, but probably a first round pick, probably right at the end of the first round, maybe right at the beginning of the second. The player I look back to is when they traded Orlando Brown. He was a star player who'd already been to at least one Pro Bowl, might have been to two Pro Bowls at that point, and they traded him. But he's a guy who wanted to play left tackle and thought he could play left tackle, and they got a mid second round aggregate value from the Kansas City Chiefs out of it. Probably that's the realistic level to get. I think, you know, they traded Marquise Brown. They got a little bit more from that. And I think they really burned the Cardinals in that trade. So I don't think they'll necessarily get that. The one other player they could trade who has tremendous value is Bateman.
Right.
Bateman has the most value probably of any second contract player other than, you know, like Lamar Jackson that they have.
Yeah, I would be okay if they wanted to get uber aggressive. I understand you saying it could be like pissing in the wind, and you don't want to mess with the offensive line too much. But if you're talking to Tyler's camp and they're saying, hey, we're at 18 to 19 million AAV with a huge chunk of guarantees, I really struggle to put in that much money to an interior offensive lineman when you've already allocated the money to a lot of other spots, right? That's the thing. Some teams, they don't have many big contracts, and you're looking for good cornerstone players. Other teams like the Ravens, they've allocated huge contracts out. So you can't just look at it as a blank slate. You have to say, what do I already have? And given what they already have, I would be okay with a little bit of...
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Of aggressiveness there. My guess was probably a mid-second for Tyler. Again, wouldn't want to do it, want him here. I do struggle with him making, you know, 15 million plus just with the fact that he does struggle against the bigger defensive tackles. I actually feel like it becomes almost a weakness at points against certain teams. Yep. give us fits. So, you know, if you could get him around that $13 to $14 million range, I mean, he's a great young Raven. I want him here for his career. But if it's, hey, salary cap flew up to $279 million, we're thinking, you know, 18 or 19 million, then if you could get a mid-second round pick, maybe now's the time to get aggressive.
Right. I would agree with that. And I think there's actually a team profile that would fit in terms of trading Linderbaum that is not uncommon in the NFL. You got to have a team that's looking to generally rebuild their offensive line, that has a lot of cap to spend. And I think if you go down the list of the teams that have a lot of cap to spend, there's a lot of teams that need offensive line rebuilds as well. So Tyler Linderbaum's a great place to start with that. And I think a mid-second is entirely reasonable. And I think another team is not going to look at the contract the same way that the Ravens have to. And Ravens really have to figure out in a lot of ways, where are we not going to spend money? Because they've got it spent, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and if you have to spend it on Stanley or Alaric Jackson or something similar, right, you probably got to take it from the other offensive line positions.
Yeah, well, I would agree. They have to take it from somewhere anyway, or Mark Andrews, they've got other things. The other thing that we talked about Andrews a little bit in terms of what are the possible things, there was content in EDC that was actually in the past tense about Mark Andrews. He's been a great Raven, you know. That's present tense too. He's been and continues to be would have been a better way to say it if you really wanted to avoid people interpreting it a different way. But you know, I think they are resigned to it at this point in terms of probably they're going to have to part ways with him. He could be cut. He could be extended. He could be traded, or they could keep him for 25 only. And I think actually the least likely of those four at this point, well, I think cut is the least likely because I think they get something for him because he's only making $11 million this year. Some other team wants him, even if it's not very much. But I think maybe the least likely of the others is that he's kept for 25 only.
Yeah, at $11 million. Yep.
Yeah, it just seems less likely. All right. And then also before the draft starts, they have to decide if they've got a guy they like who they'll go after in free agency. It'd be a first wave signing that would affect future comp picks. The Ravens obviously going to have some players walking out the door that they will, you know, potentially get some comp value out of. Brandon Stevens among those, but others as well. They don't probably want to impact their comp picks for 2026 if possible. So I would think, you know, and I think DaCosta is being very honest about it when he says we want a bunch of bargain basement guys. I think that's where they're going to be looking for players, and I think that a lot of those will come after the draft, so they won't even impact the comp formula.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of players that you can get after the draft that we have gotten after the draft recently. We've done it with the pass rushers. We've gotten a lot of veteran pass rushers that have provided a ton of value for us. But this year, we need a safety or two, depending on what happens in the draft. But I think one veteran safety adding to that mix would help. And then, you know, you factor in our Darius Washington, whether he stays or goes. So I think after the draft, there's still going to be a very decent safety market out there. So I look for them to really look for safety after the draft. I will say, if they're going to spend money on one UFA, that's bigger money, it would be they can't get a deal done with Stanley. They had earmarked money for Stanley, and maybe they're looking for a Stanley replacement, or, you know, they're looking to patch up some other piece of the line. But other than that, I'm not so sure they make a big move right away in free agency.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Okay, so let's have a little thought experiment here. They go into draft night and they haven't made any of the trades then. What would you say is the percentage chance, based on right now where they sit, that the Ravens make a trade, not of a draft pick, but of a player on one of the 3 days of the draft?
So we saw them do that with Marquise Brown, right? Mm-hmm. When he showed up in Hollywood, when Hollywood showed up in Arizona, during the draft coverage, I believe we had just drafted Linderbaum, and Lamar tweeted, "What the?" And people thought he was tweeting that about Linderbaum. He was tweeting that because Hollywood was already in Arizona. But I think that EDC likes to play close to the vest. He knows that we have limited resources. I think that if that scenario were to present itself, I wouldn't be surprised if there are draft day trades already lined up with physicals already having taken place beforehand. And then during the draft, you see something similar to the Marquise Brown situation where, Andrews is traded for a high fourth or a low third round pick or something like that. That really wouldn't surprise me.
That would make a lot of sense, by the way, that the physicals are already done, because that's a big part of it. And then the reason they would still wait and not consummate those trades before the draft is that it's still conditional upon what players fall. And, you get to the beginning of the third round or whatever, and a team says, well, we still don't have our tight end at this point. Sure, we'll take Andrews and give you, the 80th pick or whatever it is for it.
Do you think Andrews maybe like low third, high fourth? Is that where you would have it pegged? I know it's not always that easy, but
sometimes I even think we're being a little bit optimistic to say a fourth round pick. But what I would say basically is if somebody offered a second, you got to take it. You absolutely have to take it. There's no question. If somebody offers a high third, I think I'm now at the point where I don't think even in a leveraged draft situation that there's going to be a team that's going to feel desperate and decide they really got to have an Andrews for a high third round pick. So I think you probably end up giving a pick back if you get a pick towards the beginning of the third round. You might be able to use it as a way to kind of trade up in the draft and get a second round pick in exchange for giving back, say, a fourth or even a third. That potentially could happen. So there might be some movement of that sort.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think that after day two, so you've gone through rounds one, two, and three, right? You have that day in between the next round. I do wonder if once the chips from the first three rounds have settled and everyone gets to take a 15-hour breather until the next round, is that the time to work the phones where maybe that fourth round is the right spot for it? But also agree with you, Ken, could you trade a pick and move up? I mean, there's so many different varieties and flavors of that. Can you go from the 27th pick to the 23rd pick? Could you go from the fourth round to the second round? I mean, there's a lot of different ways to move. Obviously you have a lot more space movement the lower you go, and it's more compressed the higher you are, but definitely think that you could work something creative out if someone didn't want to lose a pick but was willing to move or swap places.
So the calls will be made in advance, and they'll know, they'll have some of the things set up. But my feeling would be day two is the time to be heavily on the phone about it, not day three. Day three, you've missed some of the opportunity for value. If you want to have the possibility of obtaining more value than you think Andrews is worth, it's got to start in day two, because it's got to be a second or a third with a give back of a pick, for example. Yep. So they're made whole in terms of their total number of draft picks, and you still get the value or the full value, even a slight surplus to what you think he's worth.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, think of how fun that would be, Ken. You have your draft boards, you've got your trade options, you're in a war room, you got stuff all on the wall. I mean, that's living, I mean, I sit in an office all day, and that sounds really fun.
Well, we'll be discussing that, I think, a lot on draft night. Hope you'll join us for that, by the way.
We'd love to.
That'd be a lot of fun. Let's talk about the other things they have to do before the draft. On draft day. I'm sorry, after the draft, but before the season. Let's get this straight. Mm-hmm. May 2nd is actually a big date. So you have the draft is April 24th. They've got another big date on May 2nd where they have to decide if they offer the fifth-year option to Tyler Linderbaum. Now, we talked a little bit about it before. I don't believe there's any way the Ravens can offer the fifth-year option to Tyler Linderbaum. It's 25.8 million. It is the highest single number in the entire 2022 draft class, even higher than Hamilton. Hamilton's got the sixth highest number. It does not make any sense that they would give him that money. I think they probably have already had conversations about that. Nonetheless, if they can't work on a deal right now, which I think is the time you'd have to make sure that Linderbaum is re-signed. If they can't make that deal now, then they have to think about what's Tyler's future otherwise. You know, do they have to, even after the draft, do they maybe have to trade him? It's definitely suboptimal to do that. You'd rather trade him during the draft than draft your new center at that point. But I think that they need to know what the Linderbaum future contract situation is by May 2nd when that 50-year option value comes to play.
Yeah, I mean that's why this is an exercise of not right now, not this year, but it's the next few years, and you really need to know where are you going with Tyler, or should you look to trade him, or do you want him just to play out his deal and try to get a comp pick, maybe try to get a high third or fourth round comp pick for him. But I don't see any way that you're going to lock in a fifth year at almost $26 million. That would be crazy. I'm not sure I could imagine a center that I think would be worth that value, but it would have to be, Donkey Kong is your center. You know what I mean? It would have to be, the most elite center. Like you said, Creed Humphrey really right at the top would be the only one you could really consider.
Yeah. So it's, that's where I am. And I think they have to be realistic about the amount. They were in the same situation with Patrick Queen, and they wisely said, we can't offer you the franchise tag. Linebackers were high as well. I think linebackers might be grouped with edge rushers too, or outside linebackers.
Yes.
And so it ends up being, they get way overpaid. So I think they probably told Queen early that he was never going to get that money. And they probably said the same thing to Tyler. So expectations hopefully are being managed. Hopefully there isn't anybody among his own people. That's the group I really fear, that would be whispering in his ear that there's a whole lot more money out there if you can somehow hit the open market. So that it wouldn't be an ideal thing if there's a resistance on Linderbaum's part to take this opportunity right now before the 2025 season to get himself extended and maybe a long-term Raven.
And I think for Tyler, you have to think about what's important to you. Like, I'm never going to fault someone who says money is important, right? Money is important. It's the only reason why we show up to work every day. And so I certainly don't want to knock him for that. So if money is the priority, you know, there are some teams who, I don't know if they've fielded a competent offensive lineman for decades, like Arizona. Okay, maybe that's a bit dramatic, right? But if Arizona has a lot of salary cap, you know, are they willing to offer something that's just $2-4 million higher than what we're willing to do? And Tyler might say, hey, you know, this is my one chance to get generational wealth for my family and pump this stuff into the S&P 500 and let it roll. That's okay. That's valid. You know, and I get that mindset. But if you want to be on a team that is always going to be competing for the division, always going to be competing for the league at large, you may have to take a little bit less money. And, you know, can you leverage your agent to get, you know, advertisements, like you said, local Royal Farms type stuff to maybe help pad you up. But I think that it's an interesting study if you look at players who have gone to really bad teams for really high dollars, who are cut a year or two into the mix, you know, at the end of the day, even if their sole focus was earning money, did they really make enough money by going to another team and having to play just for 1 or 2 years and potentially getting cut and, you know, ultimately really reducing their value as they go through it? So, Tyler's got a lot of decisions that he needs to make. Want to see him stay here, but these guys have to realize they're part of a team with a lot of really good players. And so everyone can't get the top of the market bag. And so do they want to work together as a team to try to kick some butt or not?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's very reasonable. And there are other benefits coming from being a world champion in terms of your marketability and whatnot nationally that I think are good, but most of the money they'll ever make is from playing football. A player like Tyler Linderbaum, that's certainly true. It's interesting. His situation, Hamilton's in the same draft, 14th overall, has a much more reasonable $20.1 million value on his fifth-year option. The Ravens won't have any problem saying yes to that. And that honestly is potentially another source of friction between the, not between the two, but between Linderbaum and the Ravens, is that they're willing to give Hamilton the $20.1 million. And they'll I'm sure they'll point to that, but also they'll compare it to the position and say that Hamilton is kind of that guy. Hamilton also is a better player relative to the rest of the league at his position.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think that's arguable. I think Linderbaum would probably be pretty reasonable about it. I'm hoping he can come back. But again, if you get the sense he's not, then let's get aggressive and, you know, see what we can, what value we can harvest from it and, you know, keep this train ultimately moving.
All right. Sounds good. Let's see. I think we talked about the rest of that. After the draft, of course, they'll need to collect bargain bin UFAs. There's a lot of places. They could bring in a new safety and get a real bargain bin guy they like, because it's a fairly deep group of UFA safeties. It seems to be now in most years that's the case. The problem is they just picked a bad one last year in Eddie Jackson. They didn't get a guy who was still productive in the league, and that hurt them. But they need to really find ball hawking back end safety play as opposed to generic strong safety. Or highly versatile safety play either. I'm not looking for a guy who can play free safety, strong safety, and slot corner. They've got three guys who arguably could fit into that group already. They need a guy who can play free safety well. So that's what I want. Or split field safety. That's the other thing I can accept.
Yeah, and I think we knew with Eddie Jackson from the jump, I wasn't that wildly excited, Ken. I don't think you were either, right? No. I mean, if you looked at the trend, it wasn't like a 1 year dip. Oh, we can revive it here. The Bears were bad for a year. It was a multi-year trend of decline.
Well, Julian Blackman, you mentioned earlier, I think he's averaged over 10 yards per target allowed career. Might be like 10.9, in fact. So he's a player that it falls into that same category. Yards per target will tell you a lot about the player. And I don't really care how bad the linebackers in front of him have been. And I don't care how bad the corners have been. The safeties who get beat on the assigned targets, because PFF usually they want to blame it on anybody but the safety. And even PFR, who tends to blame it more on the safety, they'll still give you a pretty bad picture as well of safeties that are targeted reasonably frequently. Jackson had been targeted a lot that way, and Blackman unfortunately has a fair amount of black marks on his record as well. So he'd be a player that I'd be wary of.
Yeah, certainly might not be the right fit. I mean, the Ravens have their work cut out for them. They need to fix this secondary. I think it was, of all the praise and positive things that come out of the Castle, Harbaugh, EDC, et cetera, that swing and a miss on that safety group was so big. It was making all their other players on defense look worse. You know, I mean, it made it look like Roquan took a step back. Stevens took a step back. I mean, and then you replace the two players, and then all of a sudden they're just back to normal. I mean, it was, you can't have that happen again.
You can't, but in a way, that was a dream come true, because most problems, they're not that simple to fix. You don't have transitional problems. The Ravens had one on offense and one on defense that was tremendously easy to fix. And in the case of the safeties, you had two dead batteries at the back end of the safety roles. On the offensive line, you had a guy, they couldn't get the penalties under control, and they did. And it happened basically at the exact same time of the season, and the Ravens ended up being, you know, just an outstanding football team down the stretch, you know, from week 11 on, because they got those two problems under control. So as an analyst, I'm looking at things. The most recent information is the most pertinent. Recent historical experience, RHE, you know, in actuarial terms, we look at that, and it's given a higher level of credibility. And when we have that for a football team, you got to say, you know, they are who they are, is the other way we say it in terms of sports. That you're at a point in the season, you have to just admit this may be who we are. I'm always looking for what is transitory, what's transitional about what might have happened so far that can actually, you know, with some sort of switch or swap or change in coaching emphasis, could you maybe get rid of? And they found two this last year. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was Bryant McKinney in the playoff switching.
There you go. That's another good one.
I mean, The whole thing was bizarre, Ken. I will say I have listened, read to so many different analysts, people, players talk about the Marcus Williams situation. I still, for the life of me, I can't actually say what happened. I don't understand. Was Marcus Williams, was he not playing within the scheme? Did he lose a step? Did he not want to play with the other players? Was he giving up? Did he not understand the scheme? Was it a combination of all of the above? I mean, it's so bewildering to me. Mm-hmm. And I've even heard Marlon Humphrey speak on it for a period of time, and they'll make, you know, kind of comments like, oh, if you don't want to play ball our way, then you can't play, so to speak, right? Just kind of like player speak. And what is it? What actually happened? I mean, I've never seen someone fall off the table. The guy with one arm played better just a year or two before.
Yeah. The guy who with the same last name who had one arm and the same first name for that matter. So it's very frustrating. I've heard various people talk about it, but I guess we don't need to speculate anymore. Just
sure.
There's some odd things about the free safety position and the people who play there. Eric Weddle had, I think, some weird maturity issues that would show up every once in a while, and not necessarily in terms of his on-field demeanor, in terms of his comportment at camp. There's one time I remember, okay, I don't want to go too far into a story here, but this I think is worth it. The Ravens offense with Joe Flacco in the waning years was struggling on the field. It was Weddle's first year with the Ravens. And all of a sudden I'm hearing somebody say, this offense looks like the Bad News Bears out there. And he kept like going with it, like as it was going on. And I couldn't hear who it was coming from. And I turned to Sandusky and he says, Eric Weddle saying that. And I'm like, that is not the guy you want doing that. I mean, if it's a matter of being competitive with the other unit and saying, hey, that's why we win, we always fall on that football kind of thing, that's fine. Okay. But if you're talking about, boy, you guys suck. how the hell are we supposed to win with this offense on the field? I mean, you just don't want that. And I'm sure they had a talk with Weddle about that sort of thing. I also heard him on a phone call where he was juxtaposed with, who's the tight end? Watson. The tight end who was here for a year.
Ben Watson.
Yeah, it's Ben Watson. Ben Watson. He was on the same phone call to introduce him to season ticket holders, a special season ticket holder call-in event. Mm-hmm. And you could ask questions and then they would look at how long you've had your season tickets and see if you could get to ask a question. Anyway, I was just really unimpressed with kind of a giggling, non-serious style that Weddle had during this call. And Watson is this, you know, he is as mature as you get as an NFL player. I mean, just he knew exactly where he wanted to be, exactly what he wanted to do. And he spoke very well and was just right on target. I mean, Weddle was just looked like a third grader with a 12th grader on a panel discussion. I mean, that's what it really sounded like in a lot of ways. Marcus Williams had this thing happen, but if we look back to Earl Thomas, you know, seems to always have a gun and his woman around both at the same time. It's like, I mean, why would you need that? So the weird things that have happened at safety are just there might be something about it that you need to be this free thinking, you know, guy who always can like figure out what the other person is doing. You think that gets you out of more, you know, gunfights and whatnot, or more out of even verbal discussions that would happen of that type. That gets you into trouble. But anyway, it's a strange group of safeties that the Ravens have had since Ed Reed left, and Ed Reed had his own quirks. So, right.
Yeah. If you ever want to see an incredible video, I won't take us down the tangent, but check out Ben Watson. When there was an interception thrown, I believe he was on the Patriots. He tracks the defensive player who intercepted the ball down. He's on the north side of the field. The guy on the south side of the field gets it, takes it all the way down, and he tackles him on the two. But just an incredible chase down.
Yeah, well, it's a high effort player. That's for sure. Okay, we talked about everything except what is maybe the most important thing for the Ravens to look at this offseason, which is really trying to address some of the early extensions on the team. And that's one of the things that the Lamar extension would allow them to do, is to create some dollars for that. They can get some of it through Andrews, and they can get some of it some other places. And some of them are self-funding, which we'll get to in a moment. but they've got, as I see it, 5 third-year players. You can maybe think of another one, but that they'd really like to sign long-term while there's divisible benefit on the table in terms of the player has some risk associated with injury this year or a regression of play, like happened with Brandon Stevens. They could have signed him last year to one of these deals. They didn't do it, not necessarily because they didn't try, but maybe because Stevens thought it was worth more. And he is now a cautionary tale for these five guys in terms of deciding whether or not they want to resign. But the five guys I have: Isaiah Likely, Travis Jones, Daniel Fa'alele, Charlie Kolar, and Adafe Owe is actually a fifth-year player coming off his fourth year, but because he has the fifth-year option, he kind of falls into this group as well.
Yeah, for sure. And then also you have Ardarius Washington and Tyler Linderbaum, part and parcel of the group, right? So they're kind of like the big seven, I guess, maybe.
Right.
My first question, Ken, is from Adafe Owe, good player, right? Clearly a good player, probably clearly not a great player. Not sure how to project him after he's gone, you know, already gone through 4 years in the league. Do you think he has, you know, the ability to really get his pressure rate up? I was a little concerned. It seemed like his snaps were starting to decline, or his snap share percentage was starting to decline a bit at the end of the year. I think they were trying to keep him fresh for some pass rush, but I don't know. I like the player, good player, but I have a hard time assessing his market value for the long term.
This is one case where the sack column is not giving you the whole story, because his sacks were up, his finishers were up, and his pressures were down. And that's a bad combination, particularly when you're about to pay someone.
Yep.
So you want to make sure. He had a 26% finish rate, and that's quarterback hits plus sacks divided by total pressure events. He had a 26% finish rate the previous year, and he was 50% roughly, might have been 51 in 2024, which is outstanding for it's an outstanding number of finishes, but it is a bad relationship. It's an unsustainable relationship between those two numbers. So his pressure rate will have to go up some. It will probably go up some, and he will also have less sacks this year, would be my guess. So he may take a step back there. He could take a step up in, I suppose, in both categories, but it'd be very hard for him to take a step forward in sacks without a fairly substantial increase in pressures in total. So I think he's going to be the hardest one for the Ravens to find an agreement on value on. And I think the Ravens are buy into this, the notion about the pressures, and they may not describe it the way I do in terms of the pressure pyramid being normal. But I think that they do buy into the notion that they really want players to generate a lot of pressure, not just, you know, have finishes that are cleanups of others.
Yeah. Does that give you the ability to capitalize on a trade for, I mean, I think most of the organizations are pretty analytically savvy now. Although you do see some of the moves that some of these orgs make, and it's head scratching to say the least. Do you, you know, could you capitalize on a young ascending player with a team who's looking at sacks like they could for Adafe? I don't know. He's one of the players that you would want on the team long term, but you really have to be judicious with the cash that you're handing out here.
Yeah, he just turned 26, so you're right. And from that standpoint, he'd be another guy that you might consider trading. You'd be trading from an area of weakness. It's not like trading Andrews. It's really more like trading Linderbaum, where you don't have anybody to replace the guy right now, and you'd be hoping to get that guy from the draft. I don't really see it happening. I don't really see them trading at FAO. I think in his case, the number is low enough. They'll play through the season with him, and they'll do what they do. If the Ravens were to have a disastrous crater of a season, so that would probably almost mean a Lamar injury, so we don't even want to think about it. But a player like Owe is a guy they would trade at midseason, I think.
Yeah, for sure. If you start off 2-4, you know, you have some big injuries and you're almost
take more like 2-7, but yes.
Right. Well, I guess when is the trade deadline? I can never remember. I think they extended it a little bit, but I would agree, Ken. You start off with a pretty rough first third of games, and it doesn't look like it's going to get better. Can you maybe get some cap relief, get some draft capital in? He's definitely a player you could do that with. But like you said, we don't want to think about that if we don't have to.
In terms of your list, who's the most important guy to re-sign?
I love Travis Jones. I think that he creates a lot of he commands a lot of double teams up front, which helps free up players around him. You look at players like Kyle Van Noy, right? I don't think if Kyle Van Noy was playing with a lot of other defensive linemen, would he be racking up the numbers that he does? You know, I heard, you know, someone talking to Kyle Van Noy. It was a player's podcast and Kyle was on there, and they basically were telling him that he was underpaid because of the number of sacks he got. Yeah. Van Noy, he handled it very professionally, of course, right? He didn't stir up any dust or anything. But when I was listening to that the whole time, I kept thinking, you know, is Van Noy really, if you look at the pressure numbers and if you look at some of the advanced stats, is he really just owning his man like, you know, TJ Watt, Miles Garrett to get these sacks? Or is it this team defensive line effort where between Travis Jones and Matabike in the middle, that's really hard for teams to guard, which makes it a little bit easier for the guys on the outside. So to me, I love Travis Jones. I think he's at a position where he doesn't get a lot of sacks or counting stats. And so it potentially suppresses the value just a little bit, right? Not saying we're going to go to the bargain bin here. But I think that Travis Jones is really important. And I think the decision on likely yes or no sets off a whole chain of events there. So I would start with those two players. I would have a hard time figuring out how to pay Owe in a way that he feels like, oh, look, I just had a 10 sack season. Now I feel like I've gotten paid for that, where the team doesn't, you know, I just don't know if the team and him can really meet on that value. Right. Maybe Owe studies pressure rates and knows, hey, I may never have another year like this. Let me lock in a deal and, you know, be on a good team. I mean, there certainly could be that thought process. But right. which ones jump out on the list for you here?
Travis Jones for sure is my guy as well. And for a lot of the reasons you just named, and the pass rush starts with him. But I think that the dark horse candidate here, and I'm not including Ardarius Washington in this group because we talked about him earlier, and I'm not including Linderbaum, who I think they have to make every effort to figure out how to make that contract work, and it still might not. The guy who they could get value out of this, where this might be divisible benefit, is Falele. I could easily see him really having divergent paths to come out of this year, where he really improves and becomes a near Pro Bowl level player, and one where he regresses, because that's definitely possible for a player like him, isn't nearly as good. And I think that the Ravens could get him for a mid-range contract right now. Falele would be feeling like that a lot of risk was off the table. He's certainly seen what happened to Brandon Stevens, and I think he's got to be concerned. He's a hard worker. You know, that's one of the reasons they really love him about this, or loved him in the building, and Joe D was so fond of him. I think he's a guy that I would be okay with a mid-range contract going to. Charlie Kolar, you know, fine too, but they might have to find another blocking tight end or another guy who can catch a few passes and do a lot of blocking.
I agree on the Falele front. I think that if you look at his first, I don't know if it was like 11 games versus his last six or seven, somewhere in that range. Yep, last five or so. And the playoff game, right? Or including the playoff game.
Including the playoffs.
Yeah, he really, really played well and stepped up his game. That doesn't mean it's a guarantee that it stays there. He could fall off the table. So maybe you could get some sort of divisible benefit between the two. I do think it's kind of interesting where the Ravens knew that they had to take their lumps almost and get younger, right? You lose Zeitler. I think that you could say that part of the losses to the Chiefs and the Raiders fall on Falele. There were times where Chris Jones is pointing him out and going up against him, and there's, you know, certainly periods of time where the right side of the line was not holding up against the Raiders either, though, you know, Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins, that's a tough assignment for just about anybody, right? So their defensive line's pretty tough. I would be willing to take a risk on Falele, get some guaranteed cash in his pocket. Hopefully he can keep taking the next step. When you watch Falele, he almost looks like a cartoon character. I mean, at some point in life, there's just, you know, so few people at this size, and he tries to do things that even in football players are big. I mean, he's comically big relative to football players. So he looks a little awkward. He looks a little uncomfortable. I think that the Ravens maybe learned how to play call with him in there a little bit better, and I'd like to see them continue to get better. I just don't really like seeing him make these long, slow pulls across the formation, trying to block, you know, Zach Bond or a super athletic linebacker in the second level. It just, that's not his skill set. It's almost a waste of a player. So can we maybe change a little bit of how we call the plays and continue to get better there and maybe use him better? Because people aren't going to run through him, you know? So there's benefit to that right off the bat. And I certainly think we could maybe get some mutual gain there.
With you all the way having him pulled a pass block is the biggest futility ball. He had mm-hmm. two pressures allowed in one particular game on just that. But that's a situation of the team's not really understanding what they can ask him to do. I blame the coaching more on those kind of decisions. Now, that said, it's a pretty significant limitation to have a right guard who can't mm-hmm. be trusted to pull. So yeah. they'll have to go through this. And he's a mixed bag of tremendous strengths and significant limitations. And he does not look the part at all. He is the triumph of function over form, which is usually not the way it goes. You really want to make sure you get the right price on a player like Daniel. But I think, you know, this is a good time. It's a good time to have the discussion. It's a good time for Daniel to take real stock in who he is as a player and kind of make the decision on whether or not he wants to bet on himself.
Yeah. Can you use the fact that surrounding him are very athletic players and Linderbaum and Rosengarten, right? They're super athletic players. So, you know, maybe because they're alternating super athletic and big and strong, maybe they could make that work depending on who you plug in for McCary. But maybe you could help fill some of the pulling need in that regard. But like you said, it's a big limitation to have a right guard that you really don't trust to pull at all.
All right. We'll have to call it there for today, Matt. Really appreciate you coming on and guesting for Voss here. Tell folks where you can talk football with, where people can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can find me on Russell Street or on Twitter at KidRock20. And I would appreciate talking to anybody.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, hit me up if you want to be on a film study short. There's lots of time this off season to do that. And I'll be looking for people responding very quickly, and particularly if they have a UFA you want to talk about bringing to Baltimore. For Matt Ross, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
Stay warm and save every day, all in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices, save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas mini bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.